It is 2-0 in the count.
No!
Hey, this is Jonathan from San Francisco. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Joe Spadoni and Joe Shasky.
You really are, Jonathan. You really are. By the way, Matt Lively, 9 a.m., 9 o'clock hour, Matt Lively, KPIX, CBS sports broadcaster there, talking some Niners who are going to be starting joint practices with the Denver Broncos Thursday as their first preseason game starting on Saturday at Levi's Stadium. So that will be fun to get into at 9 o'clock with Matt Lively. Matt's also been covering the Golden State Valkyries, who had a tough loss yesterday, but they are 14-14 on their inaugural season. And I do think they are going to be playoff bound. The loss of Caleb Thornton's tough, but God, if they could get like a somehow, some way, get a home playoff game at Chase Center, at Ballhalla, I'm telling you, man, it's a vibe. It was fun. And dare I say, if they get a home playoff game there, it would be Rorical kind of levels. And I don't say that lightly.
Oh my God.
You've been to a game this year, right? Haven't you?
Yes.
There's something that's different about it. I don't know how to quantify it. I don't know if it's, you know, the diversity in the crowd, what have you, but I have never seen an expansion team, let alone a WNBA team, this beloved.
Well, the Vegas hockey team created its own life.
No, that's a good one. No, that's absolutely a good one. I think them winning early on too helped in that.
Yeah, it was just its own thing. And by the way,
I saw, and they were playing the Valkyries when I went a couple weeks ago. They were playing the Dallas Wings, and Paige Becker's obviously their first overall pick out of Connecticut. She's got a huge following. The amount of just UConn fans that were in the crowd cheering her, whatever she did, was insane. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's very difficult for an expansion team to kind of gain notoriety. Right? Mean, it takes some time. So, I remember when the Marlins were originally a thing, and the Diamondbacks, the Panthers, and the Jaguars.
Well, I want to ask, because you were a kid when the San Jose Sharks became a team. Like, what was that like when you were
You got to understand, it was a whole new sport to an area that very rarely see snow.
Northern California, outside of Lake Tahoe and Shasta, right? Yeah.
I'm not a diehard hockey guy, but I've got multiple friends that are like crazy obsessed.
Yeah.
My boy Matt, Rocco, like, because these guys all grew up rollerblading and playing hockey too.
Okay.
You know, I didn't rollerblade. I wasn't a rollerblader. So I was the kid on, you know, just tennis shoes on the blacktop playing with those guys, and they were all into hockey big time.
Rollerblading was sick, like in the late 90s. There's this Disney Channel original movie called Brink. Dude. Be a soul skater. Remember that, Carter? He's smiling back there.
I don't think you rollerblade at 6'8".
No. Well, back then he wasn't 6'8". He's probably like 5'11".
It's like
when
watching
he was like
a giant, you know, bear ride a tricycle.
It's who's my guy? Zdeno Chara. I'm probably butchering his
first
name.
What is going on here?
The hockey player who's like 6'6", but on skates, he's like 6'9". He's like just this imposing figure. That's probably what Carter looked like in rollerblades. But I'm not mad at it. 888-957-9570. I'm also not mad right now about Brock Purdy, because by all accounts, he's looking great. He's dicing it up. He's looking like he's supposed to. He's looking like a quarterback that is the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. He's been consistent, limiting the mistakes. And by all accounts, when it comes to all the beat reporters, Brock Purdy's been looking good. Great. That's all we need, right? That's all I want to see. That being said, I do find it curious, and you brought this up on the call yesterday, Joe, as we take a peek inside of the 49ers training camp. The conversation around Brock Purdy is pretty quiet. There's not really any consternation from the fan base when the last couple years, hell, last decade really, all the conversation has been about the quarterback. All the drama, all of the concern, Kaepernick, Alex Smith, Trey Lance, Sam Darnold, now Brock Purdy, Jimmy Garoppolo, what is going on? It's all pretty quiet. What do you make of that?
I think there's a variety of things. You know, I remember when Jimmy Garoppolo came back off of the 2019 Super Bowl loss and got hurt, and the team just so underperformed. People were done with Jimmy, just done with him. And I think part of it was also the way Shanahan and him argued about whether he could return or not at the end of that year. And like, I'll just give you the 2020 stats. He played in six games in 2020. Now, remember, it was that COVID year. He was 3-3, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Not good. It just wasn't good. No. And there was obviously talk about Tom Brady and whether they should get him. Tom Brady goes on to win the Super Bowl that year. There was a lot that was into it. But last year was a bad year for Brock passing-wise. I went back and I watched every single game for the first 12 games. I even have all my notes right here.
You watched every single game?
Yeah, the first 12 games. I did 5 last week. I did 7 this last weekend.
God. You're insane.
Yeah, and I just made all my notes. I wanted to rewatch everything.
I say that in a good way. Like, you're, this is...
Yeah, I'm going to get ready for the year.
Yeah.
I just think that if we're being fair, the team wasn't good last year. But also, Brock didn't play great.
No.
He just didn't. And I think that we could twist ourselves in pretzels explaining why. He held onto the ball a long time, and I didn't think that he was decisive when throwing, and it looked like he threw up a lot of 50-50 balls, and he ran around a lot by design, meaning because of the way that the offensive line was awful, but also I just thought he held onto the ball. He didn't trust his guys. His year wasn't a great year.
There was clearly a lack of trust there, and part of the reason why, as you're alluding to right now, he held onto the ball for so long is guys weren't getting open.
No.
There was zero separation. He didn't have Ricky Pearse all out there for a majority of the season. Christian McCaffrey was not out there. Debo Samuel, when he was out there, was not getting separation because, oh, by the way, that's not what he does. He's not an elite route runner, and he's lost a step a little bit last year. And then Brandon Ayuk, obviously, lost him after the first few weeks, and he had to rely on Juwan Jennings, another guy who, again, cannot create separation, uses his big body, and again, that's going to be an interesting conversation a little bit later on, too, this wide receiver core. But with Brock, yeah, you're right. You look at 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. He was coming off a 31 touchdown, 11 pick MVP type of campaign. So when people try to tell me that he actually thought he looked better at times last year, I just don't believe that.
His legs were his best attribute, but I also thought that he overused them.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense whatsoever. Like, yes, those were his best attributes to moving the chains, but I also think that he just held the ball way too long.
He ran out of a lot of trouble, but he ran into more trouble because of the legs, if that makes sense. So he did a little bit of both because of, you know, the lack of separation. He felt like he had to create more often than not, and he got himself into trouble.
Yeah, and I think that the offense saw that. They missed CMC bad.
Bad.
You know, they really did. And, like, the Ayuk thing, like, Ayuk got hurt in October, like mid-October.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ayuk was there for the Viking loss where Darnold outplayed you. He was there for the Rams loss. He was there for the game against the Patriots where you should have put the Patriots away 4 or 5 different times. Rewatch the Patriots game. The Patriots might be one of the worst teams you have ever seen on offense in terms
awful.
Of personnel.
They were awful.
Awful. And he threw some bad forced red zone picks. And Kittle made maybe the best catch of his life in that game. I guess where I'm going at is it is surprising to me. Off the year he just had, no one thinks he sucks. That's not what we're talking about. No one says he sucks, but he just got paid a lot of money. And it does feel like there is absolutely zero concern about the quarterback. And I'm just going to tell you, if he goes 6-9 again this year after getting the money that he got, like, forget 6-9. Joe, if he comes out week 1 against Seattle and Darnold ends up somehow, whatever happens, they beat him. They beat him 3-0 in a defensive struggle. If you don't think we're going to field calls for 5 straight days about the quarterback, I think you're tripping. And I find it fascinating that, not that he's flying under the radar, there's just no Brock Purdy talk from the fans, from the media, from anybody.
What are the expectations for Brock Purdy this year? Like, what are the legit expectations that Niner fans are looking for? Is it just the win-loss record? Because that's not a quarterback stat for me.
No, but we
lived in the Jimmy Garoppolo era. We cannot bet wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. They're just not.
No, but like, do you win games is a part of it.
Did we not learn anything from Jimmy G? Did we not learn anything from Jimmy? Because we played this game. We played it. It's a team sport.
Yeah, no, I know, but it also
things
like
things have to work well around
managing the game is an important factor as well. Like I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, are all interceptions on the quarterback?
No.
Okay. Just like all wins and all losses aren't all on the quarterback. It's a part of it, and managing games, there is a skill to that.
Yes, I just don't like when we always go to, quote unquote, he's a winner. He just finds a way.
Well, that's too black and white.
We lived in that for so long with Jimmy G.
I agree.
And I'm just not here for that. I'm not. But this is interesting because, you know, Carter gets in my ear, producer Carter. He's like, I just text you a little nugget. And this is, you know, I do love football because we get comparisons like this. And what is this? BetMGM posted this, and it's the last two seasons, and it's a graphic of Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy. And they're just comparing stats.
Okay.
This is the last two seasons of Mahomes and Brock Purdy. Patrick Mahomes, 53 touchdowns. Brock Purdy, 51. Interceptions, Patrick Mahomes, 25. Interceptions, Brock Purdy, 23. All right, so pretty close there. Yards, 8,100 for Patrick Mahomes, 8,100 for Brock Purdy. Completion percentage, 67% for Patrick Mahomes, 67% for Brock Purdy. Their passer rating, though, 93 for Patrick Mahomes, 104.4 for Brock Purdy. So the last two seasons, I mean, outside of touchdowns, as Patrick Mahomes has two more of, Brock Purdy and those other stats and categories, he's outperforming Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Brock Purdy, better than Mahomes? Stop. Like, but I guess that what you're trying to say is here, if you're just putting that, he actually hasn't been as bad as people thought last year. I was like, no one's saying he was bad last year.
But he also wasn't great.
He wasn't great. And I actually don't think Patrick Mahomes has been all that great the last couple seasons. He's had individual great moments, and he has great plays. And when you need him to be great, more often than not, he is. And that's why he is the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, and I get it, because his stats aren't going to back that up. But if you're drafting a team right now, who are you taking? Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy? Stop. Like
that's not even a question.
Exactly. So that's why when I bring these things up. Well, that's why I bring these things up, because I get sent to them and he's not a top 10 quarterback. But you can't just look at the stats all the time. You can't look at the stats all the time. You look at the player, and that's what you were doing when you were doing the deep dive on Brock last year, and you saw a player that looked indecisive at times, that ran too much, that tried to squeeze in tight fitting areas. And he couldn't do it.
There was a lot of 50-50 balls, especially early in the season. You know, Juwan Jennings actually came down with a bunch of 50-50 balls that, I mean, they were total WTF throws where you're like, dude, why would you make that throw in that spot right there? And then Jennings comes down with it, and you don't think twice about it. You're like, oh, what a great play by Jennings. Like, decision. So Albert Breer, you know, went to Niner camp, and he did a kind of like a sit down with a lot of different people behind the scenes. And I guess the Niners cut up a bunch of film for Brock Purdy, and they basically said, like, hey, you were doing a little too much. And here were the plays where we felt like you were doing too much. And I think that's a refreshing thing to see. Like, you know, Brock's still young. The coaching staff and him, you know, obviously you want to push him to be better. And I would argue that, like, you know, their offensive line has got to be better this year. And I think that they acknowledge that. Trent Williams being in camp early will hopefully help them. You know, when you watch the first quarter of the season, Trent Williams looked terrible.
Yeah. He looked like a guy that missed camp.
So, like, as bad, like, you're talking about wins and losses, not being a quarterback set, sure. These stats, these 20 and 12, meaning touchdowns, interceptions, when your Hall of Fame left tackle plays like an average player, like, that is really going to do in your offense when your offensive line is predicated on him being an elite player. So I think that's important that he bounces back this year. I'm talking about Trent Williams. But I just think overall that Brock Purdy, the conversation is interesting, and or the lack thereof, I find to be interesting. I'm pumped for him this year. I think this is a big year for him. I think this is a big year for Kyle. I think it's a big year for the offense. Are you CMC reliant? Can you only be a dynamic next level player because of how great CMC is? Or, you know, if CMC isn't what we think he is from years past, and you're still a really, really good team, well, then we could push that to the side. Are you reliant on Kyle Shanahan? Are we able to, you know, have a dynamic offense with a bunch of no-name wide receivers? The hallmark of what makes the Bradys and the Staffords and Mahomes is they still win games no matter who the playmakers are around them.
Correct. And you look at that Chiefs team, in hindsight, because they got absolutely clapped against the Eagles, like, skill position player-wise, they just weren't even on the same, they weren't even on the same wavelength as the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you look at the names, Saquon, A.J. Brown, right? Hell, the quarterback himself is a playmaker on the with his own right on the field, running the ball, and Jalen Hurts, even though his knee and whatever. Devontae Smith, right? They just had so many guys left and right. Like, the fact that Mahomes took that squad all the way through, you know, the Buffaloes of the world, the Ravens of the world, back to another Super Bowl and tried to three-peat it, just speaks to the quarterback himself, who looked mortal. And it was very jarring because Niner fans are like, wow, that's the guy that usually gets the job done at the end of the day. No, he got his ass kicked. That was only the second time we saw that. And the first time was against Tampa Bay a few years back in that COVID year, as you mentioned, when he didn't have any starting tackles in his offensive line. Let's go out to the calls because people are interested in this conversation. 888-957-9570. What should the expectations be for Brock Purdy ending this season? And how much should be on his shoulders this year? Because quite frankly, they can't be CMC reliant. Like, I think we're going to find out in year one, Joe, when it comes to this Brock Purdy contract, if it's a success or not. Like, I think year one, we're going to find that out real quick, because if Ricky Pearsall is going to be his number one wide receiver, you got Jennings hurt with the calf, you got Brandon Ayuk out for the first couple weeks probably of the season, right? Jacob Cowling, I don't know. Like, getting around the Jordan Watkins of the world. By the way, we're going to get into getting Terry McLaurin because they need to badly after getting some of these calls. But we're going to find out a lot about Brock Purdy in this contract year one, I believe, and whether it's going to be a success.
Yeah, I think the Brock thing that's interesting is, I challenge people, go back. If you want to like have a legitimate conversation, go back and watch the games. At times he was good, and at times he wasn't good. And I thought that for the algorithm of Brock, meaning he was so great the year prior, it was down year. That doesn't mean that he wasn't a successful player at times, but I think that he would admit in the second half of games, it wasn't as dynamic as we wanted. And I thought that in particular, there were a lot of areas that they need to clean up. And I think it starts with the quarterback holding the ball a little.
Let's clean up the phone lines. Mark in San Francisco wants to join us. 888-957-9570. Mark, what's your thoughts on the Niners, man? Good morning.
Well, I think that game against Detroit should have confirmed to you guys that Brock Purdy can win, right? Even coming from behind. There's nothing wrong with Purdy. He's a great quarterback, man. Let him, give him his just due, right? He worked hard. He was, remember, the last guy picked in the draft. That's irrelevant. No one even knew he was going to be as good as he is, right? We know we win Super Bowls with defense, however. And so the team has to just come together. Defense first. Offense will show up, right? The offense will show up. Now, you remember, you missed the best running back in football. You didn't have Ayuk. You didn't have Deebo Samuels last year. He was like trying to carry the team all by himself. The defense was all jacked up behind the coordinator, whoever he was. So give us a shot this year. I think we'll be much better, especially with those D linemen, linebackers, coaching, that coach that has all the wisdom, that DB coach, right? And, of course, Shanahan knows how to put the offense together. 49ers aren't in trouble. They know what they're doing. Man, they've been to 19 NFC championship games, and you can't say that they don't know what they're doing. They're a good team. I've been around since 1972 watching these 49ers, wow. Right? Been through the Monty Clark years, been through, who's the guy's name, Joe Thomas?
Yeah.
Giants or 49ers? That's Joe Thomas, huh?
Well, Joe Thomas, the offensive lineman for Cleveland Browns?
He's talking about Joe Thomas, 1970s 49er head coach.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Right before Bill Walsh.
Gotcha. All right. That was good. Hey, he's fired up, man. Don't doubt the Niners. I don't think either of us, by the way, are doubting the 49ers.
Their defense was awful.
Yeah, there were
no. The personnel was awful. They almost by accident, you should have a better defensive personnel. Well, but I think the number one thing is like their defense coordinator also, the personnel decisions he made, playing Devondre Campbell as much as he did. I challenge anyone to watch even the 10-minute cutups, not the 45 every single snap. I'm talking 10-minute cutups. Devondre Campbell and 22 Isaac Yiannam were picked on over and over and over and over again.
He mentioned that Detroit Lions game, and that was ended up being the last game that Brock Purdy played in the regular season.
I think he was talking about the NFC Championship game, Detroit comeback.
Well, I thought he said last year too, but because he did actually have like a good offensive game overall. I know he had a couple picks.
Two horrific fourth quarter picks.
He did. I thought there was miscommunication on at least one of those. It was weird. It was like a ball that was
Brian Branch and the other guy.
I know, but there was one of them I want to recall that I know you've watched. You watched the most recently. That was not on Purdy, but I hear you there. They did put up 34 on the team, the Detroit Lions, who was one of the best teams in the NFL.
No, but their defense was also at the end of the year.
It was awful.
No one can name a player on their personnel.
They didn't have Aiden Hutchinson. They didn't have anyone, right?
Yeah, and I'm not taking it away. It's just, that was a tough one. Again, the second halves, when you watch them back, like they weren't great. They weren't great. And that's, you want to talk about like Mahomes. Where does Mahomes separate himself? Why do all the numbers for Mahomes become completely irrelevant? Because in the fourth quarter, when he has the ball, it's the fear of God in you.
Yes.
And you think that this guy's going to find a way to make things happen. They had, I don't know if you guys saw it, but they had the fourth quarter in overtime. cut up all over the internet that was making the rounds, and it was about Steve Wilkes and some of the things that he did. I'm talking about the Super Bowl.
Oh, God.
Mahomes used his legs on so many plays. There was a second and 14. He ran for a first down. There was obviously the big fourth and one where he ran the read zone option or whatever the hell they call that, where Bosa went biting on it. Mahomes was unbelievable. He wasn't unbelievable in the whole game. It's just situationally, he put so much pressure on you with his arm and his legs to make a decision and make a play in space. He picks you apart. He's amazing.
I mean, it's in any sport, right? The guy could be 0 for 5 heading into a final at bat, the extra innings, bottom of the ninth. You know, you would hope a Rafi Devers turns into this guy, or, you know, an Aaron Judge or Shohei. You just know, oh, he's due. He'll hit one. And then the game's over, right? Basketball. Oh, Steph's having a bad game, but fourth quarter comes around, last couple minutes, hits a couple of Curry flurry there, night-night sealer. That's what the great ones do when they don't have their best stuff, but you can still lean on them at the end of a game. Can Brock Purdy be that player this next year? I still think that remains to be seen. When everything's not going right around him, can he separate himself? I think at times he did last year, but the defense ultimately was not good enough. And I think you're alluding to the right
and,
there.
And the offense. And the other element, which we haven't brought up.
And special teams.
Joe, they were terrible. But watching it, I told these guys last week, watch the first five games, I'd have fired the special teams coach after 5 weeks. I'm actually surprised it wasn't more of a conversation. Jake Moody missed a field goal to go up 10 against the Rams. I know we wanted to run Ronnie Bell out of town. And look, Ronnie Bell stunk. Okay, so I'm not caping up for Ronnie. Ronnie Bell, catch the ball, right? There's no doubt. If Jake Moody hits a field goal, then none of that stuff happens at the end. None of that stuff. And then they gave up a huge punt return. I mean, there was the fake punt early in the game when you're up 14-0 on the Rams. The special teams coach should have been fired 5 games into the season.
Well,
no, it's a joke.
That's been the dark cloud over Kyle Shanahan's tenure. Special teams has sucked. It has. I know Robbie Gould was a consistent kicker. I'm talking about special teams as a whole.
Yeah.
When it comes to kickoffs, when it comes to punt return coverage, when it comes to all of it, it has just not been good enough, and it bothers me when the head coach doesn't take it seriously.
Yeah.
In the comments, and he hasn't, and he really continues not to. Now he got the guy that Robert Saleh had over in New York, and he's been with the Jets for
Brett
a while.
Boyer.
Sure, great.
Brett.
Exactly. I hope I don't know his name going forward, because that means like if out of sight, out of mind. I don't want to know the guy's name. It's kind of like offensive linemen. Like certain, like when I don't hear your name, usually it's a good thing for the most part. I don't want to know the special teams coach name for that matter, but. You know, can that be a strength for you this year? That would be a huge bonus. By the way, what's going on, Greg Joseph? I see Matt Maiocco tweeting about it. Oh, Greg Joseph, he made all his field goals. Oh, Jake Moody didn't make all of his. Are we doing that, really?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing? Let's just wait for the preseason games. We'll find out this Saturday, all right? We'll find out.
I think it all mattered. I mean, like, again, week one, he was awesome. Week two.
You got it? Yeah.
Week two, a horrible kick. I mean, I'm talking about punter as well.
Wisnowski? He's gone. He's out of sight, out of mind. We don't got Mitch no more.
And then the special teams in the Rams game gave up a fake punt return, and a huge missed field goal to go up 10. And then I go to the Patriot game, and he missed one in that one. I mean, just the special teams in that game was so bad.
Did he hit a bunch of field goals, though, week two?
No, like, week one, he hit six.
I thought he went back-to-back 20-point fantasy games, because Steiny drafted him in the first round, and I was starting to think it was a good pick.
The week two loss.
Oh, my God. Did he draft? He did not draft.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
13-7. He did hit two field goals. And Mason got a touchdown, so went to 23-13. No, he had extra points. It was 20-7 at one point in week two against the Vikings. Remember, they had two consecutive turnovers at the goal line, the Vikings did. One, Fred Warner made one of the plays of the year. The other one, Aaron Jones on the screen pass, fumbled on the one. Yeah. They should have won that game 30-7, the Vikings.
His first miss came in week three against the Rams. Obviously, they ended up losing by 3 points in that one. That was brutal.
It would have went up 10. That game would have been over.
And you're in SoFi Stadium, which is, I know it's not a dome per se, because they have like air that travels through, but it's a dome. All right. It's indoors. Like, let's relax, people. And then his worst game by far was at Tampa Bay. The winds were nuts there, right? He made a couple gutsy ones when you needed him to.
Yeah. The Windy City, Tampa Bay.
Well, no.
I mean, what are we, the
they
wind?
Have
to stop.
They have hurricanes
just please
down
stop.
There.
Just
it's
please
South
stop.
Florida.
Just
Southeast. I don't know. I actually don't know my geography. I've never been to Florida. Oreo cookie in Oakland. He says you can't this is a hot take. You can't compare Purdy to Mahomes. I know. I know. I was sent the pic. I was sent the graphic. I had to discuss it. All right. Oreo cookie. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Like you guys said earlier, those numbers are misleading, man. So what's going to separate Purdy and Mahomes is what happens in the crunch time. You know, fourth quarter, last minutes of the game. You know, I got to take Mahomes over almost anyone. But as far as what I expect for this this year coming up, I go back to the Spadoni's forget about it circle of trust, and I got three guys for you. We're going to go Lynch, we're going to go Kyle, and we're going to go Robert Saleh. Now, these guys have built a bully, tore it down, and I believe in them that they're going to build a bully again. So I want to look forward to this year is when it's third and long or even third and short, I want to get off the field. The defense has to get off the field. That starts with the defensive line stopping the run and pressuring the quarterback. And I think we're going to do it this year. We're going to be back in the playoffs. Let's go.
Let's go. Oreo cookies fired up. All right. Circle of trust factor, and we don't worry. We'll have our circle of trust throughout the season when it comes to the 49ers because I do have trust in the head coach. How could you not? But this is going to be the litmus test if he sticks around going forward is this relationship with this quarterback and Brock Purdy. And what is it going to be this season? And by all accounts, he loves the guy. That's great. There's going to be moments, though, this season where you might see Shanahan yelling at Brock Purdy and people are like, oh, no, is this bad? Is this bad? No, that's good. It's called creative tension. Brady and Belichick yelled at each other on the sideline, okay? And I think they're the greatest head coach quarterback tandem of all time. All right. That's okay. I need a little bit more of that. I need a little bit more of maybe it's a Nick Bosa on the defensive end or Fred Warner getting on guys and getting on these rooks. No, seriously. Like I would like to see more of that.
They did that last year and Debo got specialty. What?
I mean, real quick, I don't mean my wide receiver one yelling at the long snapper. Okay. Hey, Debo. How about you get at, you know, I don't know, the Jacob Cowings of the world. Not Tabor Pepper, okay? Yes. And Debo, by the way, did you guys see?
Honestly, they should have judo chopped him weeks ahead of time. Like, I would have done it to the special teams coach.
Did you see the most awkward interview of my lifetime of this past week? It was Mike Garofolo of NFL Network. Had a sit down with Debo Samuel because they were at Washington's training camp. And Garofolo was like, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, you can't give me a high five because they were saying goodbye to each other because you jammed your finger, Debo. I was like, oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that. And then Debo just looked at him like it was just silence for like 5 seconds. It was the most awkward. By the way, the most awkward interview ever at 95.7 was almost always Debo Samuel stuff. You had to make sure you had 30 questions available because you had to rat-a-tat-tat him every single time because he's giving you five or six word responses. You have to be good. You got to be on your toes with Debo Samuel. The jammed finger, by the way, for Debo already. So. Something to monitor.
I mean, Debo. But, you know, the Brock Purdy thing, back to him. And it's him and Kyle. They go hand in hand to me. They do. They were awful in the red zone. The amount of times that this team stalled out in the red zone, is that a CMC byproduct? Is that play calling? Is that quarterback? Is that decisiveness? I'm sure it's all those things. You went from the number one team in the league in terms of touchdown percentage in the red zone to 15.
Middle of the pack.
It's if they can get back into that top 7-8, they're going to be a really good team. And to me, they all go together. It's Kyle. It's personnel. It's the plays that you're calling. And then it's the quarterback. If they can be more efficient, and also pre-snap penalties really did them in as well. But if you can get back into that top 10 area, then they'll be a really good team.
Are there any question marks that you still have when it comes to Brock Purdy going forward? 888-957-9570. What are those questions? We'll go to Jonathan in San Francisco, who we just heard on our rejoin. Jonathan, good morning. You're on the Morning Roast.
Hey, good morning, Joe and Joe. Expectation, you guys asked. I honestly don't know, man, but this is my hope. I hope that Brock Purdy is at least above average. And how does he does that? He accomplishes that by having a pretty good offensive line play, you know. Yeah, offensive line needs to be above average. I trust that running game is going to be there. But more importantly, you know what they need to do, man? They need to release George Kittle. I don't want to see George Kittle playing offensive line 90% of the time he's on the field, man. They just got to give that guy a chance to abuse linebackers and safeties and let him run, bro. Let him run and catch pass. I know he's a pretty good run blocker, but, dude, he's one of the best catching tight ends in the league. It's criminal that they held him to help out the offensive line all these years, man. They should have been grabbing, catching passes and accumulating yardage as a pass catching tight end. And also, I need to see Brock Purdy connect on deep throws. I'm not saying all the time. I want to see that 3-2 a game, right? To keep defenses honest. They can't do that. It's a passing league. What are we doing, bro? It's going to be inside the numbers all the time again. Hey, man, if they can't make that adjustment, I don't know, right? If they can't throw downfield in a passing league, I don't know what we're going to do.
It's a good point, Jonathan, at the end there, because that is my question I have for Brock still going forward. If you need to lean on this guy's arm, like let's say, like this is a big possibility. Let's say McCaffrey's not that dude anymore. Let's just say like he's just not that guy. By all accounts, he looks great in training camp. Let's say
we'll see.
The grind of a regular season is something else, and we shall see. And let's say you have to lean on his arm, Brock's. Like, can he do that? Can the 49ers be a throwing and passing offense and win games that way going forward?
They're never going to be a throw first team.
But if
that's just not, then as long as this guy's coaching, I have a very hard, I mean, it would be a humongous reversal in what he hangs his hat on.
I'm not asking it to be all the time. I'm asking in moments and games and stretches and games when you have to lean and you have to throw from behind to get back into games. Can Brock Purdy do that in this offense? That is a legitimate question mark I still have.
I mean, that's a question mark. The guy just won the Super Bowl, and people are asking that about Jalen Hurts. I don't think that's exclusive to Brock.
I know, which is ridiculous.
No, I know, yeah. But I think there's like four or five guys that we think that can throw from behind. It's Stafford, it's Burrow, it's Josh Allen. I don't even think people think Lamar can throw from behind, which I disagree with, but you know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about a handful of guys that get the benefit of the doubt, and all the other guys, it's to be determined. I think that this thing about throwing deep, that's actually not a problem for me on Purdy, like throwing deep. I thought he held onto the ball to try to throw deep too much. I think he didn't trust the checkdown options with Jordan Mason, and I think that actually hamstrung their offense more than anything. I thought that teams didn't really honor the running backs in the passing game the way they had before, so you had more guys dropping into coverage, and I think he was holding the ball because he didn't trust the intermediate stuff as much, and I don't think he was as decisive on the check down underneath stuff. I actually go in the other direction. I have very little issues with his arm and the deep ball throwing and the intermediate throwing. It's more like, do they trust the guys underneath? That's where I fall down.
Well,
on
that's
this.
And then it comes to separation, right? Like, you need to be able to separate at the top of these routes. And can Ricky Pearsall be that dude?
Because he had a monster day Saturday.
He had a monster day, but is he even doing one-on-one drills?
Like, no, but he's killing it in 11-on-11.
Kyle Shanahan.
Before we move on, that's where I go. Yeah, you also have no D'Amino Lenore out there, and you know Renardo Green's out, so you have a bunch of nobodies. In the secondary.
Injury bug going around the 49ers training camp right now, by the way. I don't feel great about this. I know I was gone for a little
McKivitz
bit.
McKivitz has missed time. Jennings has missed time.
Rando's hurt.
Yeah, right? I mean, there's a lot. Mikel Williams is nursing an ankle. Yeah. Like, there's a lot. It's not about, like, who's healthy, who's not. It's who can go every day.
That's exactly right. And Kyle,
I think they're thin.
Yes, and Kyle Shanahan spoke about easing Ricky Pearsall back into practice last week.
We're just still trying to get Ricky back, you know, we're easing him in. I think he got, you know, we gave him, I think he had one practice back or two, you know, just 8 plays. Then he got one off. And then today, I think he got 8 plays again. So we're easing him back in. It'll get there. We're just trying to make sure he can last throughout camp.
And I would love, and we talked about this the last couple weeks, Joe, like if I could come away from this season and that Brock and Ricky Pearsall connection could be my number one connection going forward, that would be massive. Obviously, George Kittle is going to be a part of that. And I heard Jonathan, and I think Jonathan speaks for a lot of 49er fans, where they're like, Kittle's our best pass catcher. Like, he's our best receiver. Why don't we use him more? Well, part of what makes the 49ers offense and Kyle Shanahan's run offense so great is a part of that is George Kittle blocking. So, like, I understand and I hear you, but, like, you can't be mad at the running game doing well. Like, that's part of what George Kittle does them. And then you can't also be like, oh, I'm upset all the time. No, no, no. Part of what makes this offense run is George Kittle being so unique. And I get it. Today's NFL, I think we're so fantasy football. So we see the Trey McBrides and the Brock Bowers and all the targets that they get. It's like, why can't we have George Kittle? Well, look at those teams. Who are they? It's the Cardinals and the Raiders. Like, they don't have really anyone else.
And George gets great yards per catch, yes. And he has great run after the catch. They actually used him in the red zone after, like, the fourth week way better.
Yes.
And it felt like they realized that their own issues in the red zone were because they didn't have CMC. I think they missed CMC way more in the red zone than I even wanted to admit.
Yes. No, especially in the passing game when it comes to all of that, right?
Formation, versatility, and honoring all these motions pre-snap. They really missed him.
You know what I'd like to see a little bit more? And I see it all the time with Andy Reid. And whenever we call these guys like geniuses, and we saw it in the Super Bowl, give me some more. And I know it's not gimmicks, but more trick play bag for Shanny. I would like to see some more creativity in the red zone.
He doesn't necessarily call plays for guys.
No.
Like, he calls plays. Like, you don't see a split out wide. You're running either the slant or the fade, and it's your choice. It's an option route. Like, you don't see that a lot, the ISO play.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got to isolate the mismatches. And this is when it comes to audibling. This is when it comes to Brock Purdy and the next evolution of his game, Joe, is getting up on the line and seeing a mismatch. Oh, I got a 5'8" corner on George Kittle right now, one-on-one, and every single time. And then that's when I have to signal to my quarterback. That is what's going to be that next evolution of Purdy's game. You saw it with the Bradys of the world. You saw it with the Mahomes of the world. Lamar, everyone. It's being able to isolate those mismatches in the passing game. Whether it's Christian McCaffrey, right? Take him out of the backfield, all right?
I also think not having Debo is going to help them in the red zone. Debo was great from the 40 yards, from 40 out. He was so much better in the red zone. He gets no immediate separation.
No, it was as you would like to say, it was constipated.
He was very predictable. They threw a backward screen in the Viking game. I don't know if you guys remember. It was bad.
I do remember that.
It almost got picked. It was so bad. And it was like, because the Debo stuff became very predictable. I think actually not having him is going to be it's going to really free up the offense. You're not going to feel this like, got to get it to Debo here.
Well, Debo Samuel is playing in Washington, and there's a current disgruntled Washington player that has requested a trade. His name is Terry McLaurin. And on the other side, we're going to discuss why the 49ers should be very, very interested. And there's a relationship between the 49ers and Washington that obviously goes back to this offseason when it comes to Debo. Amongst other things, Adam Peters being that relationship. But in the meantime, injury report. And the phone lines are open. Leroy in Oakland, we will get to you on the other side. 888-957-9570. That's the number to call or text the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. And speaking of Boxer and Gerson, this is the injury report. And Giants infielder Wilmer Flores exited Friday night's game in New York against the Mets with left hamstring tightness after legging out an infield single. He didn't start Saturday or Sunday for San Francisco and isn't expected to land on the injured list. We'll see, though. Hammies could be difficult or trifficult. Shout out Bluey. The injury report was brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. What's coming up with the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. More of your calls, more of your texts. Diving into 49ers training camp as the road to Levi's starts on Thursday. It officially starts with joint practices, because that's when the pads will be popping. There's going to be some nastiness. You're going to have some scuffles going on. It's going to be Denver. They have a very good defense, one of the best in the league. And we're going to be seeing some old friends this week, Joe. Will we see Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga? Very interesting. And will the 49ers regret moving off from those players? Something we'll discuss as the show goes on with Spadoni and Shasky in the morning, or else 95.7 The Game.